I'm sure you're aware that this evening we're going to have the third study in the series Peoples and Places, and with our brother David Wood we are to consider Tarshish. He hasn't asked for an introductory reading, so we'll hand proceedings over to David.
Good evening to you all. We're going to start with Jonah. So if you'd be so good as to find the prophecy of Jonah, that's where we're going to begin. So Jonah chapter 1, verse 1. Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, "Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and cry out against it, for their wickedness has come up before me." But Jonah arose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. He went down to Joppa and found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare and went down into it to go with them to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. Now, Tarshish features quite a lot in that little narrative. It's sort of emphasized almost that that's where Jonah wanted to go. Why did he want to go to Tarshish? What was Jonah up to? Well, he was trying to get away from God. A futile exercise, as we know, but he thought he could make a success of it at the time. God had said, go east to Nineveh. He didn't want to do that. God, he supposed, was in Israel. So he wanted to get as far away from Israel as he could go in the opposite direction. So he set about going west. You can't sail east from Joppa, can you? You can only sail west if you picture the Mediterranean. And he found a ship going to Tarshish. He wanted to go to Tarshish. He wanted to go to the end of the earth, actually, as far from Israel, west, as you could reasonably go. So he found this ship going to Tarshish, paid the fare, went down into it to go with them to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. That's what he was trying to do. He thought, well, let's go as far as we can to the end of the earth. God's in Israel. I can avoid having to do what he's asked me to do. Didn't work, as we know, but it brings before our attention Tarshish. Now, I have some maps here, which James is very helpfully going to pass around. I didn't give them out at the beginning because I didn't want you fiddling with them and flapping them and reading them while I was introducing my remarks. You will find there's a sheet at the beginning with a list of chapters, and then there are two maps. So now you have those, we'll just look at them when you've all got them. There should be enough for one each, but if they do run short, I'm sure there are people who can share. One of the maps, in some copies, you've got it printed both sides. I think that was just a photocopier having a funny 5 minutes. There's nothing special about that. It's not a lucky copy or anything of that nature. You just happen to have two copies of one map. I don't know how that happened. Gene, have you got one? You got one? All right, okay. Thank you, James. Well done, that's just about right. Now, just to focus on what you've got there, the first page has a list of chapters. That was photocopied, actually, from an overhead projector transparency I had of this. Those chapters are just chapters where Tarshish is mentioned. I'm not sure that it's an exhaustive list, and it's not in any particular order, and some of them I'm not going to refer to anyway, but it's just so that if you want to, you know, pursue this on your own account. And you may or may not be disappointed to find that I'm not really going to talk about Ezekiel 38. I'm going to talk about Tarshish. You can form your own conclusions then as to what Ezekiel 38 means when it talks about the merchants of Tarshish. I leave that to you. Tukiim down the bottom. I mentioned the OHB because Tukiim, I wrote on the OHB slide when I used it, and that was there. It's a plural word, because it ends in IM, plural Hebrew word. If you get a little bored, you might want to speculate what creature, animal or bird, would make a noise, tuki 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 tuki, because it's onomatopoeic, and it's the word the Hebrews use to describe a particular creature who I imagine made that sort of noise. Tukim, tukim, tuki. The im is the plural bit, but tuki, 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 tuki. You can amuse yourself with that. Now, the first map is a little bit later than Jonah's time, map one. It says 670 BC, so that's a bit after Jonah's time. But I've marked a few things on it. Things haven't substantially changed between Jonah's time and then. You'll see what it is. It's the Mediterranean with a few bits of Africa and Europe and so on above and below. It doesn't mark Joppa, but you will see Tyre over on the right-hand side. You'll see where Tyre is, and Joppa's just down the coast a little way, isn't it, from Tyre. If you go west from Tyre to the end of the earth, you come to southern Spain, which quite literally is the end of the earth as far as the Mediterranean is concerned. And there you will see Tartessus, the kingdom of Tartessus. And you'll often find Tartessus and Tarshish equated, the similarity in the sound. And you can see why Jonah wanted to go there, because it's an awful long way west of Israel. So that tells us where Tarshish was, doesn't it? What it does and it doesn't, as we shall see. But there is Tartessus, and if you go to the next map, which is back a little bit further, a bit more towards Jonah's time, I guess. And this has to do with trade and trade routes. These maps, by the way, are taken from the Penguin Atlas of Ancient History, which I find all those penguin atlases extremely good, although the writer doesn't believe the word of God, and some of his judgments are coloured by that fact. But nevertheless, in terms of getting a picture of what was where and what was happening when, I find them invaluable. Now, Tyre is marked very clearly there. Jerusalem isn't, but Samaria is, so you can see that. And over in Tartessus, southern Spain, you will see copper, tin, silver. I've added gold there because gold was also found there in due course. So clearly, if Tartessus was Tarshish, or one Tarshish anyway, what the Phoenicians were after by going there was valuable mineral wealth. Copper, tin, silver, gold, I think mercury and lead were also found there in due course. So that was why it was worth making this very long siege voyage all across the Mediterranean. I've marked Carthage, North Africa there, Tunisia, really, because Carthage was a sort of colony of Tyre. They were Phoenicians. And the Carthaginians, you may know, established a sort of empire over southern Spain and the hinterland round there until they were subsequently dispossessed by the Romans as they expanded their empire. And there were one or two references in the scriptures about Tyre, which are explicable if you understand the Tyrians, the Phoenicians, transferring the centre of operations to Carthage and that sort of thing. Just below Gaza, just above Memphis, you will see, if it's come out clearly, Ezion Geber, I've marked, at the northern end of the Red Sea. And near Ezion Geber, it was Aloth, modern Alat. And that is important because you could sail from there down the Red Sea. And when you got round the corner, you had a choice. You could either carry on east, well, northeast really, round the coast of Arabia, and you ended up in northern India, what we would now call Pakistan, and around there. And you will notice that ivory and spices could be obtained there. Alternatively, you could turn south when you got out of the Red Sea and go down the coast of Africa. You could turn around Somaliland, which is on that bit sticking there where I've written to East Africa, and you could sail down the coast of East Africa. And there is some suggestion that the traders from Ezion Geber did just that, even reaching perhaps as far as Kenya. The southern end of the Red Sea, you had Sheba, which also features in some of the accounts we have. So take a good look at that map and notice what's obtained from where, because that does have a bearing on Tarshish. So we'll just put that to one side for the moment. I guess we may well come back to it. So, we've seen Jonah's attempt to get to Tarshish. We've seen that the Tyrians, the Phoenicians, were the premier traders and sailors of the ancient world at this time, and were much sought after by other nations, actually, to crew their ships, or at least to work with their own people in sailing enterprises. Now, would you please turn to the second book of Chronicles and chapter 20. Second of Chronicles, chapter 20. And you'll see now why I've spent some time getting you to picture the layout on those maps. Verse 35, this is Jehoshaphat. After this, Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, allied himself with Ahaziah, king of Israel, who acted very wickedly. And he allied himself with him to make ships to go to Tarshish. And they made the ships in Ezion Geber. But Eleazar, the son of Dodavah of Maresheth, prophesied against Jehoshaphat, saying, "Because you have allied yourself with Ahaziah, the Lord has destroyed your works." Then the ships were wrecked, so they were not able to go to Tarshish. Now, those ships were not going to southern Spain or anywhere like it, were they? They were made at Ezion Geber, at the northern end of the Red Sea. They were made to go to Tarshish. And Jehoshaphat allied himself with Ahaziah to do this. Now remember that Ahaziah had got very strong Tyrian or Phoenician connections. So no doubt the Tyrians, the Phoenicians, were brought in on this enterprise. It failed, of course, because Jehoshaphat was allying himself with someone who was wicked. And the ships were destroyed so that they didn't go to Tarshish. Very good example of what we read in, I think it's Psalm 48, "Thou destroyest the ships of Tarshish with an east wind." Now here were ships of Tarshish, which were destroyed, possibly by an east wind, but anyway, they were wrecked, and they didn't go to Tarshish. The word "of" is rather flexible sort of word when you think about it. Ships of Tarshish might mean ships belonging to Tarshish, and it might also mean ships which go to Tarshish. Same as merchants of Tarshish might mean merchants which come from Tarshish or merchants which trade with Tarshish. You know, let's realise the slight ambiguities there are about the word of. Anyway, these were ships made to go to Tarshish, but they didn't go, and they were going from Ezion Geber. So they must have been sailing down the Red Sea and then either going round to India or possibly down the coast of the east coast of Africa. At least that was the intention. Turn back, if you would, to the first book of Kings now. This is all very interesting, I find, all these references, and it really sort of begins to build up a picture of what Tarshish was all about. First of Kings in chapter 22. First of Kings 22 and verse 48. Now, this is a sort of parallel account, I think. I'm not absolutely sure that it's describing precisely the same events as in Chronicles, but it's quite interesting to compare the two. Verse 48 of 1 Kings 22. Jehoshaphat made merchant ships to go to Ophir for gold, but they never sailed, for the ships were wrecked at Ezion Geber. Ahaziah, the son of Ahab, said to Jehoshaphat, "Let my servants go with your servants in the ships," but Jehoshaphat would not. You can see this business of the Phoenicians or people with Phoenician connection working in with people of other nationalities in their naval enterprises. Now, whether this was a later incident and Jehoshaphat had learnt his lesson by then, I don't know. But and whether he had a second go at it, the ships were still wrecked at Ezion Geber, so they weren't going west. They were merchant ships, it says in the New King James. Now, there is a footnote there that the literal reading of that, the literal translation, is ships of Tarshish. In other words, ships of Tarshish equals merchant ships. Not necessarily ships which belong or come from Tarshish. They might be ships that go to Tarshish or are capable of going to Tarshish, which was a long, difficult sea voyage to make. That's the literal reading there. New King James says merchant ships. They were to go to Ophir for gold, which is interesting. Should we equate Tarshish with Ophir? Obviously, you could get gold from there. Was it down the east coast of Africa somewhere, Ophir? Is it the same thing as Tarshish? There's different readings as to where Ophir was. Young says it's a place in southern Arabia from whence the products of India were brought to the west. In other words, it was a kind of transshipment place. You brought the stuff from India to southern Arabia, and then you went from Ezion Geber to southern Arabia and brought it back, and then you could export it on to the west. That's one opinion about Ophir. There is an alternative. I'll just read you from the... I'll read that presently, actually, because it connects with Solomon. That it was Somaliland or somewhere in that area. That was Ophir. Wherever it was, you could get gold there, and it wasn't southern Spain, was it? Because you wouldn't get there from Ezion Geber. So that was Ophir and these ships of Tarshish. And remember this suggestion that ships of Tarshish means large ocean-going vessels capable of long sea voyages, which the Phoenicians could use to trade from what were then quite far-flung and exotic places. What was Jehoshaphat trying to do here? He was trying to emulate Solomon. Now, Solomon was very successful in this enterprise of trading with distant parts and Tarshish. Perhaps we could turn to 1 Kings and chapter 9. Let's go back to 1 Kings chapter 9. And verse 26. And you'll see what I mean. Jehoshaphat was trying to emulate Solomon and show that what Solomon could do, he had restored you know, Israel, Judah, at any event, to the position that it was in Solomon's day, perhaps. I mean, he hadn't, but this is what it is. Verse 26, 1 Kings 9. King Solomon also built a fleet of ships at Ezion-Geba, which is near Elath on the shore of the Red Sea in the land of Edom. Then Hiram, who was king of Tyre, of course, sent his servants with the fleet, seamen who knew the sea, to work with the servants of Solomon. And they went to Ophir and acquired 420 talents of gold from there and brought it to King Solomon. So Solomon was successful in his enterprise, and Hiram, the king of Tyre, sent Phoenicians to help him, and they went to Ophir, and he came back loaded with all this gold. Was it East African gold? One wonders. Now, go on to chapter 10 of 1 Kings and look at verse 22. For the king had a merchant... the king had merchant ships at sea with the fleet of Hiram. Once every 3 years, the merchant ships came bringing gold, silver, ivory, apes, and monkeys. So here was Solomon's merchant fleet, ships of Tarshish, merchant ships, with the fleet of Hiram, and they went, took them 3 years, and they came back bringing gold, silver, ivory, apes, and it says here, monkeys. I don't think they went to southern Spain for that lot, really. I don't think you would get ivory, and probably not monkeys at that time, from the south of Spain. Once in every 3 years, they went. Can I just read you a little extract here from Old Testament History by John Bright? This is what it says about the Red Sea trade. Inspired by Phoenician expansion to the west and with their active cooperation, Solomon sought to develop similar possibilities by way of the Red Sea to the south. He constructed, certainly with the aid of Phoenician shipbuilders, a merchant fleet at Ezion-Geba, and, manning it with Phoenician sailors, he undertook to send it on regular trading voyages as far as Ophir, apparently roughly the equivalent of present-day Somaliland, but not everyone agrees with that. These voyages took a year and at least parts of two others, presumably allowing the ships to touch at ports on both sides of the Red Sea. They brought back to Solomon the wealth and exotic products of the south, gold and silver, rare woods, jewels, ivory, and, for his Majesty's amusement, monkeys. That's your Tukim, actually. Some translations call them peacocks. Other translations call them baboons. And there they are chattering away. You know, your monkeys or your baboons, or, if you like, your peacocks. But I don't think they went to Cornwall or anywhere like that for those, did they? Once we were mobbed, actually, in Trevano Gardens in Cornwall by peacocks, but I think they'd been imported like Solomon's were. So they went, they were ships of Tarshish, and they went either to East Africa or round to northern India, or possibly both. And it may well be then that Tarshish has a whole variety of meanings. In fact, I think it does. A whole variety of meanings. It can be a specific place or several specific places. It can mean a type of vessel, type of ship. And it can just be used, I think, for somewhere that's a long way away and rather exotic and where you get unusual things to find. Certainly, it was always some distance away. Turn, if you would, to the 2 Chronicles again and chapter 9. 2 Chronicles and chapter 9. It's interesting to compare the parallel records here. Second of Chronicles, chapter 9 and verse 10. The servants of Hiram and the servants of Solomon brought gold from Ophir and brought algum wood and precious stones. And verse 21, the king's ships went to Tarshish with the servants of Hiram. Once every 3 years, the merchant ships came bringing gold, silver, ivory, apes and monkeys or peacocks. Again, we have this idea that they go to Ophir or Tarshish, and they go to somewhere a long way away, a long voyage, rather exotic, from which they bring back unusual, what we would call, I suppose, luxury goods. And you see that Solomon and Hiram had got rather a good thing going here, economically, because they were middlemen, and they always make the money, don't they? They were importing raw materials from the West. The Phoenicians were, at any rate, the gold and the silver and the tin and so on, southern Spain. And then they were exporting these luxury items which they were bringing from the East to those who had the money to buy them, I guess. So that was quite a money spinner for Solomon and Hiram. And there was obviously very good reasons why Hiram and Solomon should be friends and work together. It was mutually beneficial to both. It gave the Phoenicians an outlet to the south and the east, and it brought a nice little income in for Solomon. And we know all about, as we read the Queen of Sheba, the wealth and splendor that Solomon had and all the riches that he amassed. I have a reference here to Ezekiel 27. I'm not quite sure what it is, but we'll turn it up and see what it says. Ezekiel chapter 27. And verse 12. Oh, yes. This is a lament over Tyre. Tarshish was your merchant because of your many luxury goods. They gave you silver, iron, tin, and lead for your goods. Javan, Tubal, and Meshech were your traders, and so on. So that's a reference to the Phoenicians trading with Tarshish. And verse 25. The ships of Tarshish were carriers of your merchandise. You were filled and very glorious in the midst of the sea. You see why I'm saying that ships of Tarshish doesn't necessarily mean that ships that belong to Tarshish. These were Phoenician ships. They were ships of Tarshish, that is, large merchant ships which were carrying all this merchandise for the Phoenicians, the Tyrians. So this highly profitable trade between Solomon and Hiram and the East and the West. It does mean that, of course, well, perhaps we could just have a look at the map, actually, again. Let's just remind ourselves of what we're looking at here. Just look again at map 2 and just consider, and just remind yourself what that all looks like. You see Tyre, you see the trading route to the far west, southern Spain, and you see the trading route to the south and round to northern India, or possibly down to East Africa for what could be found down there. Now, as I said, I'm going to leave you to ponder in your own time who the merchants of Tarshish might be in Ezekiel 38. You will have sensed that I'm not at all convinced that it has anything much to do with the British Isles. There was a time when Britain was the world's premier trading nation, and also the world's premier naval and seafaring nation. But I don't think, I can't really see that that applies at the moment. So yeah, I leave you to ponder on that. What I think is interesting is that when God chooses to bring down man's pride, He speaks in terms of bringing down the commercial and economic and trading enterprises on which man sets such store. Turn, if you would, back to Isaiah's prophecy and chapter 2. Isaiah chapter 2. And we'll take it, verse 12. The day of the Lord of hosts shall come upon everything proud and lofty, upon everything lifted up, and it shall be brought low. Upon all the cedars of Lebanon that are high and lifted up, upon all the oaks of Bashan, upon all the high mountains, upon all the hills that are lifted up, upon every high tower and upon every fortified wall, upon all the ships of Tarshish and all the beautiful sloops, which I think is a type of ship. The loftiness of man shall be bowed down and the haughtiness of men shall be brought low. The Lord alone will be exalted in that day. So that's what God is going to bring low. All the ships of Tarshish, all this trading work that represents, is going to be brought down. That's what man puts such great store by, his ability to prosper and make money. And God is going to bring that down. All the ships of Tarshish, destroying man's cherished institutions, you might say. And so we turn to Psalm 72. Psalm 72. And we'll read some verses there. We know that this speaks of God's, Christ's rather, universal kingdom. Verse 8. He shall have dominion from sea to sea, and from the river to the ends of the earth. Now, what we understand by sea to sea, what would somebody in those days understand by that? Would they understand the Mediterranean and the Red Sea and round to India? They might do. Anyway, those who dwell in the wilderness will bow before them, and his enemies will lick the dust. The kings of Tarshish and of the isles will bring presents. The kings of Seba and Sheba will offer gifts. Yea, all kings will fall down before him. All nations shall serve him. And I think this is bringing before us the worldwide extent of Christ's kingdom. It talks about Tarshish and it talks about Sheba and Seba. And that is a poetic way, I think, of saying the East and the West, actually, in this context. Because there was Tarshish in the west, or at least there was that distant part of southern Spain. That was one end of the earth. And then you would go the other way, Sheba and Seba and around there, and you might consider that the other end. Christ's kingdom will encompass all. And so going back to Isaiah and chapter 66... Isaiah chapter 66 and verse 19. Verse 18. I know their works and their thoughts. It shall be that I will gather all nations and tongues, and they shall come and see my glory. I will set a sign among them, and those among them who escape I will send to the nations, to Tarshish and Paul and Lud, who draw the bow, and Tubal and Javan, to the coastlands afar off, who have not heard my fame nor seen my glory, and they shall declare my glory among the Gentiles. So here again, we are picturing the distant extent of God's kingdom. It extends as far as Tarshish and these other places. It extends, in other words, to the end of the earth. Go back, if you would, to Psalm 139. Sorry, I shouldn't have said go back. We haven't been there, have we? We've referred to what it says, but we haven't actually turned it up. Psalm 139. Now, it doesn't mention Tarshish, but you'll see why we're finishing up in this psalm. Jonah thought he could escape from God by taking a ship and fleeing to Tarshish. Almost certainly, he was hoping to end up in southern Spain, though he possibly didn't realise where it was exactly. He could have tried the other way and gone down to Ezion Geber, probably was farther to go, and see if he could get a ship there, if there were any available, and go the other way. It wouldn't have worked any better, would it? Verse 7 of Psalm 139. Where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend into heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. The wings of the morning in the east and the uttermost parts of the sea in the west, even there your hand shall lead me and your right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall fall on me, even the night shall be light about me. Indeed, the darkness shall not hide from you, but the night shines as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to you. God is in Tarshish just as much as he is in Israel. Jonah had to learn that lesson. And of course, it's a lesson we all have to have in our minds. And can we finish then with verse 23 of that psalm? Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxieties. And see if there is any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting.